all you Hubby people out there and all you podcast listeners, I'm so glad you came to us today. I'm going to give you a quote that our next guest, Felicia, wrote. You know, we have a little sign-up sheet when we ask, what is this podcast going to be about? What do you want to talk about? And I'm going to leave it at that, and then you're going to hear her talk, because she is quite amazing in what she's done. And she says her name is, well, now she's going by Felicia Kleinpeter, but she just said she's changing back her name to Felicia Monteforte, and she's just announced that on the podcast. She's going to go back to her maiden name. That's part of her reinvention now. So here is her quote. I was a stay-at-home mom, became addicted to drugs, lost custody of my children, got into long-term recovery, and started a New Orleans recovery community. And the community is called Imagine Recovery. And I will just give you a little bit of her background, and then you just have to listen to her and what she's done for her community. And the point is, it's never too late to get sober, no matter what your issues are. And she's just such a joyful, upbeat person. You have to listen to her. So here's just a quick background. Felicia is a proud New Orleans resident, a graduate of Tulane University, and a parent of a 2021 Tulane graduate and LSU senior. She's on the Family Leadership Council, a national campaign council boards at Tulane, and a board member of Send Me a Friend and National Foundation for Collegiate Recovery. In addition, she works closely with and supports Tulane University's Collegiate Recovery Program. She says she's been active in mental health and substance abuse field for the last 12 years, spending a lot of her time working with families and individuals looking for help. And I'm gonna let her take it from here. And I just want anybody who's listening to hang on and get her phone number. She's willing to talk to you if you need recovery. She's also willing to talk to you about your future in the recovery business, if that is what you feel your calling might be after listening to this. So I hope you enjoy our conversation here with Felicia Monteforte. Here she is. Felicia, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you here.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So I always like to find out, because I think there's always a thread behind people's reinventions. Where did you grow up? And were your parents reinventors of any sort? Or, you know, did you have a history of this in your blood at all before? Where are you from?
I grew up in Beverly Hills, California. And I live currently in New Orleans. I came here to go to Tulane. And, you know, what a great question. Both of my parents actually are reinventors. And so I do have a little history of that.
So tell us quickly about what your parents did that was a reinvention.
Well, my dad was in the clothing business for a long time. He was a real self-starter. And at one point, that just kind of phased out and he moved. And at like 65 years old, he became a realtor in Palm Desert, and he's now 86 and still going strong.
Oh my God, fabulous.
Yeah, my mom is really incredible. When my parents got divorced, she was 40, was an affluent stay-at-home mom, and really wound up not getting anything in the divorce. And she went to paralegal school and worked, and then worked in the car dealership and became a nanny. She's just incredible. And at 85, she's going strong. And I'm just so incredibly proud of her, the way she, you know, took care of herself and reinvented herself. She's amazing.
All right. So you have it in your blood a little bit. It's not unusual to look at your parents and say, oh, they, you know, they stayed the course the whole time and now I'm reinventing. So Absolutely. Talk a little bit about yourself. You went to Tulane. What did you study at Tulane and what did you start out with?
I studied sociology at Tulane a million years ago, it feels like.
Not a million.
Uh-huh. No, I'm just playing. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
That's fine.
And so I studied sociology. I wound up moving to Baton Rouge temporarily, I thought. And then I met my husband. I'm no longer married, but I met my husband and was a stay-at-home wife and then mother. And so I worked as a legal secretary briefly in his law office, but I really didn't work for 20 plus years. And then came sort of a reinvention.
So do you want to talk a little bit about, you were a stay-at-home mom, you ended up addicted to drugs, you lost custody of your children, and then you got into long-term recovery, which is where you are today, and you're one of the foremost recovery communities in New Orleans. Do you want to talk a little bit about what happened and how that happened, and how Sure. you how that led to your reinvention?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, briefly, I was a stay-at-home mom. My husband was a, you know, very successful attorney. I definitely lived two lives. One of being, you know, the socialite and all the things a mom does, and then the other was, you know, using drugs, drinking, what I thought was successfully at the time, managing it, and over time, it just got worse and worse and worse. I became addicted to pain pills after a car accident and just started spiraling out of control. So my husband and I separated in 2005. And then it got so bad that in 2006, I went to court, emergency sole custody hearing, and lost custody of my children. The conditions were that I get sober for at least a year in order to see them. I didn't get sober right away, unfortunately, but you know, everything that happened led me to where I am. So gratefully in 2008, I moved out to Palm Desert where my dad lives and went to treatment and have been sober ever since, in active recovery, because there is a difference. And because of that decision and footwork, I am grateful to have the life I have today. And I can certainly elaborate on all of that. Is that what you'd like me to do?
Yeah, I would love to hear about what finally worked for you for recovery. We have so many people who are listening who may have a similar problem, either a, you know, a small one or a beginning one or be in denial. How did you know it was a real problem? And as we know, you know, there's a lot of acceptability for a lot of stuff. And we don't think we have a problem, right? How do you know it is a problem?
That's a great question. I didn't recognize it at the time, how bad it was getting. It's like I couldn't see it. I knew it was a real problem when I lost custody of the children. I mean, I was a very heavy cocaine user and was, you know, my whole lifestyle just, you know, was very indicative of the fact that I had a real serious drug problem. But obviously being taken to court and being declared an unfit mother was the real moment, I think, that it became clearer. And what I want to say is how I got into recovery. I went to treatment at an all-female treatment center. I actually went on a county bed, Riverside County bed, to a wonderful place called the Hacienda Valdez, all women. And what I learned many things and over the years is we don't do this alone. If anyone is struggling out there, you know, I want to put it out there. My cell phone is on my website. You are welcome to call me and just talk to me. Let me give you some hope. Absolutely. Absolutely. Please do that. I just thought that there must be something wrong with me that I couldn't quit on my own. How could I be doing this to my children and not quit? And I didn't realize that addiction is a brain disease and there's the physical and the mental. And so really the thing is whether you're at the misusing stage where it's kind of becoming a problem. I see a lot of people like that where they can recognize, hey, I used to drink one glass of wine every night. I'm now drinking two. I can see where this could lead to a problem. Let's catch you there. You don't have to fall. And it's about community. It's about reaching out. I mean, recovery communities all over the world and here in New Orleans are so supportive and so wonderful. And, you know, at my business, we do great therapies and just, you know, it's such a great opportunity to learn about ourselves and dig deep and create a whole new life, you know? So that's what I've done, gratefully. And that's what we do here for others.
How old were you when you decided that you were going to get actually sober and move in that other direction?
I was 43 when I got sober. I forgot to mention that I had been to treatment a couple other times, like 10 days and left and it had to get worse. But 43 is when I got sober. And that was July 16th of 2008, a date, my most important birthday that there is. And so, you know, and I see people getting sober in their 60s and 70s. I mean, it's never too late. I have a client right now who's 69 years old. She's been sober 2 months and said this is the greatest her life has ever been. And her husband concurs. It's just, you know, it's just amazing.
It's interesting that it can happen at different ages. It doesn't, it can happen no matter how long you have been out of control. You can pull yourself out.
Absolutely. And, you know, please note that some people don't even start having a problem until their older ages, older, quote unquote, ages. I know people that never drank or used drugs, and then their kids grew up, or they, you know, could be just late in life that they had a lot of time on their hands. Listen, the pandemic led to a lot of depression, anxiety. I'm a big, yes, big believer that mental health is what fuels substance use. You know, most people start misusing because they're self-medicating a mental health issue. Yes. So the pandemic, really, the isolation, the all of that. And so, which is why it's really, really important when you find help to find help, you know, people that work with mental health, not just substance use. And yes, so it happens to people at all stages of life. I have clients that are 17 years old. Well, 18, I don't treat 17 year olds, but 18 years old or 69 years old. So, but it's always a good day to turn your life around and find joy and have a purpose and all that stuff.
And so do you see any difference between men and women, or older women and younger women, in terms of prevalence of problem or ease or difficulty of changing? Do you see any age breakdowns, sex breakdowns, in terms of, or is everybody the same with the, you know, what they struggle?
Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. That was such a good question. I hadn't really thought about it just like that. I really, if I just could just very quickly glance in my brain, I don't really see many differences necessarily. I think that as far as when we get older, empty nesters, perhaps late in life divorces, change of economic stature, some traumas that can happen. Also, you know, let me say this, there are women and men for that matter, perhaps, that are raising children that are so busy focusing on raising the children, they don't take the time or have the luxury to look at like past traumas or childhood incidences or whatever. And so once they kind of have time on their hands, it sort of starts staring them in the face. And so perhaps later in life, there's just some things might come up, but I see people of all ages, all socioeconomic backgrounds. I mean, it certainly doesn't discriminate. And so, but again, anyone can get sober and get into recovery and just, you know, be happy and all of that.
That's fantastic. What do you see coming out of COVID? Do you see more issues about alcohol or drugs, or what are you seeing? And are you seeing a reduction in opioid use, or has that leveled off or disappeared? What are you seeing in terms of what the issues are?
Well, I would say during COVID, alcohol was probably a really prevalent substance. I think that in a shutdown, it's harder to get drugs. And of course, you know, with you know, grocery delivery and all that kind of stuff, I see people misusing alcohol, just being home and perhaps not in a good home situation, or just bored, or like I said, that isolation. We say that like the opposite of addiction is connection. So not being able to connect with people, really and some people that lived alone. I see, and then as far as the opioid question, the opioid issues, the amount of people I see on opioids have probably gone down. A lot more marijuana issues. Marijuana today is not the marijuana of old. It is incredibly potent, 98%. You can, you know, smoke it, use a vape pen, eat it. And we're seeing people have psychotic breaks, a lot of young people.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, it's creating, people think, you know, pot will mellow me out. I'm really super anxious. But it doesn't. It does the opposite. So that's a thing. And then we see a lot of Adderall addiction,
Oh, wow.
prescription drugs. Oh, absolutely. I talked to a girl last night, as a matter of fact, been on Adderall for 2 years. It's one of the, it's a heavy stimulant. And I
Right.
understand that people have the need for ADHD medication, but we can find one that's not habit forming, and it's a heavy stimulant. And so, that sort of, I take one, I feel like Superwoman, but it's, so anyway, we see a lot of that. And so,
And do you see any of this like tapering off? Do you see it getting worse? I mean, I'm reading a lot about people disconnecting that with the recession a little bit, and the current inflation situation, that people apparently are cutting off things that are not necessary, like gym memberships, things that connect them to other people. They're not going out as much because it's expensive. Are you seeing any of that as a boomerang and as a problem towards connecting? Are you seeing any of that?
Yeah, I could easily see that. I hadn't really, again, you bring up so many good points. Those things would definitely lead to potential substance use, issues. Like you said, the gym membership, those wellness things that we promote, yoga, meditation, being outside, being, in the park, going out, whatever it might be. So yeah, more isolation definitely can lead to mental health things, which how do we self, we weren't born with skills. The DBT skills, for example, we teach here, the other skills, we're not born with those. We're not taught those in school. So how can I change the way I feel? Let me reach for a bottle of wine, reach for something else. So yeah, all those factors play in. Gosh, you had said something that sparked something in my head, but I lost it. Hopefully,
That's all
hopefully,
right.
hopefully I'll remember it, because I
No
could feel it.
worries.
It was a good one, but I can't
No
remember
worries. That's all
what
right.
it was.
I find sometimes if you stop thinking about it, it comes back. That's the easiest way to
Oh,
approach.
I
Go
know what
ahead.
it was. I
Oh,
do know what it was. It
okay.
just came to me. Electronics, phones, laptop. I mean,
Oh, yes.
I of course see people. I have young people here that are, home alone, gaming all the time, not making
Yes.
friends, finding friends online, just obsessed with telephone, phone usage, social media, all of that, which isolates people even more. There's that,
Yes.
I mean, to be a young person today with all the comparisons on social media and all that stuff, I just feel like that's another thing that keeps us isolated. I mean, go into any airport, you may see two people out of 1,000 reading a book, but everyone's on their
Right.
phones. People
Right.
don't, not talking to each other anymore. So,
Right. Right. No, there's no, I know this is, I mean, they're talking about teenagers and teenage girls having the worst self-images ever and being more isolated than ever. And they are really finally, there was a piece I just read yesterday, I think, that where they're really dragging it back to the advent of the phone and social media.
Absolutely, I agree.
In our own space, and we're sitting there. You see them. I mean, we see them at the restaurants. You see two young people. They're sitting there having a meal, and they're both on their phones. I'm like, what? I don't really get it. But this is where we are with the lack of connection. I mean, and that's one of the things we really try to do at Covey. I mean, we're all about connection. We're all about creating connections and that deepening sense of sisterhood and helping each other and making those things happen that are no longer happening in real life. Talk a little bit about Imagine Recovery and what it is, because you started that, right? And what is special about it? What's different about it? What do you do?
Okay. Do you mind if I just have a little lead in on how I got
Sure.
here? Okay. So, just to give some hope to women out there, at 43 years old, I got sober. I hadn't worked in 20 something years, didn't know what kind of skills I had. And I wound up getting a job as a waitress in Palm Springs. My first sober job, I had that job for 19 months. Initially rode my bike and the bus. Then my dad helped me get a car, and I was never late. I never called in sick. It was the greatest thing, just having that structure in my life and really sociable. So that was the, just for anybody that's getting well, just go out there and do something, right? Just, you know, something you love. And it doesn't have to be a huge thing. It's not your forever career, but it's having that as a stepping stone is huge. Then I moved back to Baton Rouge to be near my children and started working in the treatment field. I did I had a job for about 7.5 years that led me traveling around the country, visiting treatment centers and meeting therapists and going to conferences and just lots of connection, you know, telling them about where I worked and all that, which then led me to open Imagine Recovery. My partner, Christopher O'Shea, and I, as a Tulane grad, I was at a friend's house here in New Orleans and learned that in our current president's first semester, I want to say possibly first year, but I believe first semester, we lost 7 students to overdose and suicide. And I know a lot about treatment and where good treatment takes place. I didn't believe there was a place in New Orleans that could really help these students. So turned to my partner, Chris, and said, we just need to move to New Orleans and open a treatment center near Tulane and Loyola. And he's like, okay. So that's what we did. I mean, really, never owned a business, never opened a business.
Wow. So
but
you
I
did it.
Knew,
wow. Incredible.
I knew what good treatment looked like, having been so many places and meeting the greatest people and where I would want to send my children or my loved ones. And so in 2017, we hired our clinical director, August Boyd, who's still with us. And we started creating Imagine Recovery. And we just celebrated 5 years in January.
Awesome. 5 years is a big marker. I just got to 6. It's a really big marker for a new business.
We're very, very excited. I feel like we've really, it is a big marker. It was really very, very exciting. And so what makes us different? Imagine Recovery is spectacular. And I don't say that because I own it. My staff is so loving, so caring. My clinical staff, we have all licensed therapists, are so dedicated, and our psychiatrists and just the community. I have Claire and Savannah in the front office. And what makes us different is we are a mom and pop, which I love. And so we're very involved. And anyone who comes here knows they're loved. They're going to get the best clinical experience. They're equally as important as the community of people they're here engaging in groups with. And just knowing that, you know, we're here to help you in whatever way we can. I mean, beyond the doors of Imagine. So I don't know. I just feel like this place is so special. And, you know, the things that my clients and alumni and families tell me are so, it makes me feel so fulfilled, and that I definitely have found my purpose, and that we are just all doing this together. So, and let me just say this, Leslie, that, you know, what we love to do as well at Imagine is we're a really big part of the community. We have sober living homes. We do lots of recovery events, sober events. We did a big Day Before Jazz Fest crawfish boil last year. We'll do that again, support musicians and all kinds of things. So it's just so important to like be one of the community, because how do people discover they want to get sober? Not just because they're having a problem, but because they're attracted to the way sober people are living. It's like the attraction, like that, rather than promotion we talk about. And
like
so it's like, wow, wait, they're having a great time and they don't drink or use. Like, is that possible? That's what, I didn't think people did that. And so it's really, really important to and support our therapists in the community, offer them events. It's all about connection and relationships. And so we do that here.
And you're in a community. I mean, I remember, you know, I just moved down here before lockdown, and I remember I was in shock when the mayor for COVID didn't lock down the liquor stores. They kept them open as, what were they calling them? It was the most important. Remember, they only left open the most important stores, pharmacies, yeah, and supermarkets. And I remember turning to my husband and going, liquor stores? And he said, Leslie, if you're an alcoholic and you're cut off, that's a life and threatening danger. So,
well, that's true.
I never thought about that. Never occurred to me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the essential businesses.
Essential businesses. Essential. And I was like, what? Like, really? But I didn't realize that. And, you know, you see a lot of it here. You definitely see a lot of drug abuse. You see a lot of alcoholism here. Because it's a, fun party place. People come and that's what they want to do. But so you're really in the heart of an area. I mean, it's prop, yeah, I would imagine that it's got to be tougher on your behalf because it's kind of the, we're the good time Charlie City, right?
Well, we certainly are, we definitely are. But what I find is this happens everywhere. But New Orleans, of course, is the place people come to party. And the great thing about getting sober in New Orleans is that there is a huge recovery community because the people that used to party really heavy here decided they wanted to live and got sober. So we have a huge recovery community. It can present some challenges, but there's going to be challenges wherever you go. And so I feel like New Orleans is a great city to discover sober. We have so many things to do here. And certainly based on, our outcomes, it can definitely be done. One thing I wanted to mention is I know I brought up Tulane earlier, but our Tulane Collegiate Recovery Program, my partner and I really helped Tulane get that started. And, being able to help young people discover before they have to go to where I went or others go, that recovery is possible. And again, I can't stress enough the importance about treating mental health. Must treat mental health, not just substance use. So it's just been a it's such a wonderful ride seeing people of all ages, discover a new way of life. And we had talked before the podcast about how to help others do the same thing. And once again, I want to say I would love anyone, the women who are listening here, to call me. If this is not your calling, opening a treatment center, we can talk about what is. I had a girl call me saying she wanted to open a center in Nashville, and would I
Oh,
give her
wow.
advice on what I did? I said, I will tell you
Fabulous.
everything that I
How
did.
fabulous.
I am
That's
more than
great.
happy to empower. And she's like, how would I do it? I said, honey, if I can do it, you can do it, right? Like, you just have to, just, I don't know how it happened. It seems like magic. It's been a ton of
Right.
work. I've learned so much, but you just do the next thing. And I've asked for help when I didn't know how to do, flyers or whatever, early, like in my career
Right.
early on, I shared it at a meeting. I was in tears, like my new job, I have to create literature and I don't know how to do it. And one of my home group members said, my wife's a school teacher. Come over to the house on Sunday. She'll help you. I mean, it can make me cry just thinking about that. So we have to be able to say, hey, I've got this thing I need to do and I really want to do it. I'll put the work in, but does anybody know how to help me? And oh, people are so loving and generous. And that's something that I just want to say is I want to help. I want to have phone calls, meetings in person, whatever I can do to connect. And being a big part of the city, my partner and I know so many people. So somebody will say to me, I think I might want to do this. I go, ah, I got the perfect person to introduce you to.
Lovely.
They would love to take you under their wing, whatever it might be. We've treated a lot of chefs here. So it could be, I'm newly sober. I want to go into the food and beverage industry. Ah, I got a place for you or a
Oh,
mentor for you.
fantastic.
So anyway, I could go on and on, but I won't. Go
That's awesome.
ahead.
So just as we pull into closing, Felicia, talk a little bit about, if somebody's going to try to do what you do. What are the, like, do you have like three do's and don'ts that you didn't know before you got into this? Is there, words of advice you would give somebody like me, who's had some kind of work experience before, but says, no, this is really what I would like to do, other than calling you.
Okay.
What are the do's and don'ts about it?
Okay, gosh. Well, the funniest thing I can think of is, having never owned a business, I thought I could do things on my own that I didn't know how. So like I didn't hire an accountant for 9 months. Don't do that.
Oh,
I
ouch. Oh, yeah.
mean,
Oh,
how
ouch.
complicated could it be, right? Oh my God. I look back now. I was like a child. Okay. Do hire people, surround yourself, it's worth it to get the best people. And I will say this, we have a culture here at Imagine. The staff, I love my staff. They are treated very well. I don't max them out. I support them in learning more things. You have to, the do's are create a work environment where you would want to work and make sure there's love and respect and breathing room, because the thing is that not only is it good for them, but the clients feel it if there's they're overworked, they're overstressed, all that stuff. So that's a thing. A third thing is if you make sure you just keep your ethics, obviously. Ethics, you know, this field treatment, you know, can be, there are some bad players, but I don't want to talk about them. There's some great people out there, and just make sure you never do anything that goes against your gut, and ask other people for advice, because you can't turn back once you've made that kind of decision. You know what I mean?
Wow, so,
and as people are longer sober in recovery, you can really feel that intuition kicking in and trust that, and just surround yourself with great people.
Awesome. Now, Felicia, where can everybody reach you? And I think you should, if you will take calls, go ahead and give your cell.
Absolutely. I said it's on my website. My cell is 225-937-1132. My email is Felicia, F-E-L-I-C-I-A, at imaginerecovery.com.
Awesome.
And as a funny note, Leslie, my name on the podcast is Felicia Kleinpeter. That's been my name ever since I got married. But as a 57-year-old woman, I'm reinventing myself, and I'm going back to my maiden name, Monteforte. So I'm just going to announce it here. I'm trying to figure that out.
You're going reverse. I'm going reverse.
Well, you know, my children are in their 20s now. Their dad, who I get along great with, is remarried. Okay. I think it may be time. So anyway,
yes, just I love it.
Saying it out loud here.
Fantastic. I love it. And can people reach you anywhere else? Do you have social media or anything like that?
Oh, I have Facebook, Instagram. I don't check it all that often. So I'll be like, people messaged me 3 months ago that I just noticed. I'm a much bigger caller, texter, email.
Okay. Wonderful. Felicia, absolutely. Thank you for all you do. What a story. And I really feel the sense of the recovery community here. I'm really surprised by it. And it's amazing. I can't believe how deep it is. And you guys definitely have created something very special. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Leslie. I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you very much for listening to this conversation. I hope this was helpful. I think Felicia is an amazing representative of somebody who really believes that life can start. I mean, listen, it started after 40 for her. And the most beautiful part of her life started after 40. And that's really the message of Covey Club. If you are serious about your reinvention, mosey on over to coveyclub.com. Check out all we have for you. We have articles, we have essays, we have guides, everything about reinvention that you might need. We have essays by people who have done it. There is no reason not to get started today. And if you really want to get serious, come join Covey Club, where we have this incredible group of women just like Felicia, who will hold you up while you figure out what's next for you. And we do everything from 30-day challenges to get you started on momentum to your next thing, to classes that we teach, to a book club. It's not all about reinvention. It's about everything that happens in midlife. Though we do have a sort of tilt towards reinvention, because we know that midlife is a time of change and a time of rebirth and regrowth. And we hope you'll join us over at Covey Club. So come join, be a member, and feel the warmth and the love of a community of women just like you. And until next time, we'll see you back at Reinvent Yourself, the podcast. Bye.